Whenever feasible, one should always try to eat the root. Would you join me at the table?
Welcome to Eat the Rootcast, a podcast about NBC's Hannibal and the works of Thomas Harris. I'm Cooper, and with me I have...
Hi, it's Miko.
And this is Ophelia.
We're back!
We are.
We are, and better than ever.
And Hannibal's back!
Hannibal is...
Oh my god!
And better than ever.
So what we're doing, we're drinking tonight.
I don't know about better than ever. There's some first time...
Well, we'll get there.
Okay, it's only the first episode.
Tonight we are drinking Ménage à Trois Midnight. Because it's that kind of party.
Oh dear.
Is it that kind of party?
With us, it's that kind of party.
It's always that kind of party.
Ain't no party like a swing set party.
Because a swing set party is mandatory?
It's mandatory.
We are talking tonight about episode 1 of season 3, Antipasto. How is that ideally pronounced?
Antipasto.
Antipasto. So you've got the Italy going
yes,
on.
I know I can speak Italian. I can speak in the Italian. Actually, I know
New York.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, okay. So you are our duly designated Japanese consultant last season.
Right.
And
what's funny about all of the stuff that we've done in here is that I've spoken French. I'm not fluent in it. But I learned enough to get by.
And you learned enough to be able to do a convincing accent.
Exactly.
And when I'm drunk,
I speak impeccable French. But I was so drunk at the time, I don't even remember.
I don't remember.
So like on Broad City when she gets drunk and blacks out and then becomes a lounge singer?
Right, exactly. Exactly. The same thing with Japanese. I'm not fluent, but I know enough to get by. But I've been to Italy, and I sort of combined the French and the Spanish that I know and managed to get by in Italian. So
I'm looking forward to the back half of this season when it's painting names in English.
Ah, there you go.
This is my chance to shine. But really, so it sounds like really all you have to do is lilt with it. Antipasto, you know, basically.
Exactly.
Now you've got...
I sound like the Count.
I was going to say, you've got a Super Mario brother. It's a me. I'm a good me.
It's when Mario runs into Hannibal on the streets of Italy.
Now that's a chase
convinces
scene.
Him to kill Luigi.
Can we get Hannibal as a character on Mario Kart?
On
his motorcycle?
That would be amazing.
Nintendo, get on this.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, it sounds like the kind of thing Nintendo would do.
Well, I mean, Mario Kart's a pretty brutal game. I mean,
that's true.
Have you seen
Hannibal would have the blue shell the spikes.
Oh, yeah. And then he'd eat you afterwards.
So, tonight's episode...
He'd have
the chomp.
The chomper.
That makes sense.
The chomper.
Mm. Written by Brian Fuller and Steve Lightfoot, our favorite A-game people on this show. Directed by Vincenzo Natali, who came to fame with Cube. One of my favorite little no-budget horror movies.
Yeah, that was actually done very well. I don't know how that wound up, like, crossing my path, but I found it so interesting.
I got it when I had just bought a DVD player, and I was just browsing through the DVD section because I just bought a DVD player, so I wanted to buy some media for it. Mm-hmm. And the Cube cover looked really unusual.
Yeah.
And I think I'd heard about it at some point, but it was really a very effective and economical use of space and color, and I didn't know that that would lend himself to the Hannibal universe.
There is no economy of use
no.
of space.
But it looks amazing.
Yes.
It's minimalism at its best.
It is beautiful.
And before we really get going, we want to thank soundonsite.org for not only having us on the This Is Our Design podcast, which you know because I put it as an appetizer on our feed here.
That was such
an
awesome
aperitif.
Fun.
Yeah, that was so much fun. And just a crazy setup because we all had headphones on and had Skype going.
It was epic.
And it was weird, but it worked.
Yeah.
Shockingly, it worked.
If I sounded weird on that podcast, it's because I kept hearing myself on like a 4 second delay.
Same here.
Yeah.
I think we were both like stumbling just a little bit on our words.
And a big thanks for them co-hosting and co-producing our Twin Peaks podcast, damn good podcast about Twin Peaks, which just wrapped up just in time.
Yes.
For Hannibal. And it will be back post-Hannibal.
Post-Hannibal. Yes.
So it's been a long time for us since Hannibal last.
Yes.
You didn't have as long, Miko, but it was still a long time.
That's true. Since you saw Fresh Hannibal.
Yes. Yes, Fresh.
Fresh
Hannibal.
Exactly. It was a long time for you.
I'll admit, I was really nervous because this season had to, by default, throw away everything.
Mm.
You know, last season could still get away with, okay, well, it's still procedural, even though Will Graham's in jail, we can still do the procedural thing. We'll go visit him. It'll be just like Silence of the Lambs.
Right.
And but this season, after, as Hannibal says, he took off his person suit, you can't put that genie back in the bottle. Mm-hmm. It's got to be something different. I don't know that I expected it to be this different.
This thoroughly, and what's interesting about it being this different is that he's still taking from the Thomas Harris canon.
Yes.
This just is not what we expected out of all the places he could have gone. And I think what I found unexpected about it is that I find that usually he takes tiny bits and pieces of things and melds it together and makes one thing. And in this case, he just sort of went, I like this big chunk.
Yes.
And he took the whole thing, and it's not really taken apart as much.
No, it's not.
Yeah. That part took me by surprise.
I think whereas before he was sprinkling in ideas, now we're seeing sort of the opposite. Now we're seeing the whole cloth plot. And now he's sprinkling in other things that amuse him, you know, little things that excite Brian Fuller, you know, because if you listen to one interview with that guy, he is Hannibal Lecter, just doesn't kill and eat people.
That we know.
Very true. But everything else about that man, everything else is Hannibal Lecter. Did you know he went to school for psychiatry? Yeah, he wanted to be a psychiatrist. He wrote his first paper about the nature of fear, what it does to people when watching Alien.
Wow.
And his teacher said, okay, you're going to choose one of these schools and you're going to go there. And he had all these film school brochures for him. And so that's Brian Fuller's launch into film.
Interesting. Yeah, it's interesting that he went into film and not into film analysis.
Yeah.
And kind of melding the two together, the psychology of horror.
Ah, film analysis, that is one of those purely academic pursuits. There is no applicable value to film
other
academia.
Other than becoming a professor and having students in there and just talking about, you know, how films are made.
So this episode takes place in a number of different timelines. And I thought the easiest way to go through it would be to sort of break it up and go chronological order through these timelines.
Mm-hmm.
And right off the bat, we start with something that we've heard about and wondered about.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Bedelia on the floor of her office with a dead body that happens to be played by TV's and film's Zachary Quinto.
I know.
Spock himself.
Exactly.
Is dead on the floor.
I love that.
Siler?
Siler.
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 I love how the guest star translated to dead body on the floor.
Yeah.
He was also in American Horror Story.
He was wonderful in American Horror Story. Oh, yes. One of my favorite things about that first season.
He was an interior designer. Yeah, I forgot his character's name. But
I can't remember his character's name. But they were the couple that lived in the house. And
yes. Dead gay couple.
In the gimp suit.
In the gimp suit.
The guy in the gimp suit.
Yep.
Gillian Anderson's amazing in this episode.
She is.
I mean, just amazing. And amazing in the variety of styles of performance she gives. Because you know, we were still, and you see a little bit of this in the episode when she's talking to Jack Crawford about how he may think he knows what's happening with Hannibal. And she's doing that really considered and slow, thoughtful dialogue.
The quite unnatural.
The incredibly unnatural.
Speech pattern that always has fascinated me every time that she's on. Because like my brain sits there and goes, what is this choice? How did this choice come about? Because this is such a specific way of speaking in a rhythm that is not natural in any way. And I always wanted to know what the motivation behind that is. And then to have her change that.
Yeah.
Is.
Well, I think really what that showed me is when she is very considered in what she's saying, she speaks in that fashion. And she speaks in that fashion when she's talking to Hannibal. And she speaks in that fashion when she's talking to the FBI. Even when she's just talking to Will, she's a little bit more relaxed. Like when she goes to his prison cell and says she believes him. I think it's very much the measured speech of someone who will not reveal anything more than she wants to because she's going to be so measured.
Well, she has to be reserved around the FBI because she's guilty of crime and she doesn't want them to know.
Oh, crime!
Or of crime.
Crime!
Crime!
That we get to see in detail. What's crazy about this opening, in this scene, this is a flashback in the episode, and then we go from this flashback to a flashback within the flashback.
Within the flashback.
So she sits up, sitting next to Zachary Quinto's bloody body, then remembers when she pulled her arm out of his throat.
Anatomically impossible. And first of all, okay.
How far could you go?
You could do it, but that blood would be hers.
She's got skinny little arms.
That blood would be hers.
Yeah.
You would totally scratch the hell out of yourself going inside an esophagus. You've got the teeth. She'd literally have to give him a Glasgow smile to get her arm in there.
Well, Hannibal knows how to do that.
He does. But as you saw, Zachary Quinto's mouth was opened, but not torn.
But I love the horrible sort of like jelly look when she's pulling her arm out, how his lower jaw is distended and then readjusts. It's just upsetting.
Well, it was that sort of It smacked of that fake magician's trick of having the hole in the table.
Yeah.
Yes, like she's pulling it out over on the side.
It's really...
The Mary Poppins?
Exactly.
Or it's
exactly.
A fake body she's gonna with pull a gelatin face.
You know, a lamp out of there.
some multicolored handkerchiefs all tied together.
Now the thing I will say is it is likely this is meant, since it's a flashback within a flashback, it's meant that this is what she's remembering doing. Not necessarily what she did.
That's what it felt like.
It's really possible she reached into his mouth and grabbed his tongue and yanked on it. And then just remembers, oh my God, I pulled my entire arm out of his face.
It would be really hard to do that and execute, like, somebody's death. Like, without him clawing at her.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing. Hannibal checks the hand.
Did she poison him first?
Okay. Yeah.
See, this is the thing,
we expected
to get more information when we finally got this, and we get nothing.
Oh, no, there's still so many more questions.
We don't know how that image that we see of her ripping her arm out began. We don't see the origin of it. I'm thinking that they're going to show it to us, but we just don't have it now.
From what I hear, he is signed for 2 episodes, and
so
this is one of them.
Back.
Okay,
so. But this is one of them.
Okay.
So it better happen next time we see him.
The information we will get will all happen in another episode.
Unless all he does is lay on the floor, which they could have done in one take.
Yeah.
Then I highly doubt he's not going to be reoccurring as a live patient.
I would
he's
like
gotta
to
come back. As
I would
a
like
patient.
To think that if you're going to take the time
right?
to get Zachary Quinto on your show, that you're going to give him a line or two.
Yeah,
yeah. He's gotta, somewhere he's going to be, you know, standing up.
He's got to do something to antagonize.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
There's no way she would have made the one comment that he was your patient before he was mine, and we'd get that idea that Hannibal baited her.
Yes.
With a decision and a choice that she had to make.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to let this kind of filth live or this rude person continue to be rude, or are you going to do something about it? She clearly does something about it, but we don't know why. There's got to be an antagonist.
Well, I think it's similar to Randall Tier. Hannibal wound up this guy and pointed him at Bedelia,
yes.
either to kill Bedelia because she knows too much. Or see what she can do.
She can do, yeah.
I don't feel like he would have done that.
Well, I don't know. Well, maybe, hopefully, we will learn more.
Feel like an accusation.
I feel the latter is true.
Yeah.
I feel the latter is true, that he got wound up by Hannibal and went in. But I almost feel like Hannibal discovered this person that would be his victim and decided to see what Bedelia would
that could
do
be.
With this piece of human garbage.
When Bedelia just says, "I was reckless."
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Because Hannibal talks to her about whether she was defending herself.
Oh.
And she says, "I was reckless." And that's such an interesting choice of words.
Like, we've had a few sessions and I want to kill you.
Yeah.
But I just didn't think about it all the way through properly.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the reference back to Abigail Hobbs when Hannibal says, "What have you done, Bedelia?"
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Because he said that
to
Abigail.
Abigail.
And it's basically this MO, because when he's helping her wash up, he offers to help tell the version of the incident that she wants
that
to be
she
told.
Wants to be, yeah.
And I can help if you ask me to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's where she makes this pact. That she seals her fate in that moment asking for Hannibal's help.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she's obviously out of her mind when she says it. You can see she's shaking. She's still processing what she's done. Then you get her and she's, you know, rinsing her arm off. She's still kind of like in this dissociated.
She's still like, probably remembering pulling her entire arm out of this guy.
Or what she did to get her arm down there.
Yeah. That's very true.
A certain amount of shock, a certain amount of trauma.
Yeah.
That sort of.
She's clearly out of it.
Kind of a sort of fugue state.
Yes.
Because it seems like she gets that way when things get out of control.
Yes.
She's almost like that at the end of the episode.
Oh, yes. She absolutely
When she's
is.
Terrified.
When she's
yeah.
terrified. Where it is, it's like everything is too real.
Yes.
In that moment. And it almost looks like she's not spasming, but like having sort of like an epileptic fit kind of thing. That sort of fugue state of her eyes flutter.
Mm-hmm.
She's
everything.
She's no longer able to be objective. She's no longer able to. I think a lot of what this character is defined by is her ability to step back and just observe. Just like Hannibal has that. And I think that's why he likes her, because she can objectively observe something, even something horrible.
Yeah.
Well, and she does in this episode. She gets a little too scared.
Yeah.
She gets a little too much in that.
It gets too close.
But before we go there.
Yes.
Let's talk about Abel Gideon.
Oh, can I tell
Poor
you how
happy
I'm so happy to see Gideon. I wish we didn't have to go back and experience this with him.
Yeah.
I wish we could have done.
I will say, let's remember, this is the man who gouged out a nurse's eyes and then created the wound man simulacrum and cut that guy's veins out of his body so he could hang up his organs on a tree.
I cannot resist his charm.
I don't think it makes
Hannibal.
Us like him anymore.
No, I agree. Abel Gideon, I was so excited when, I mean, Brian Fuller has this habit of running his mouth off. If you want to stay spoiler free, do not look at a single thing Brian Fuller ever has to say about this show. But when one of the first things he said is, "Oh yeah, Abel Gideon will be back." And we're like, what? I was pretty sure he was dead.
Oh, he
I had
died.
A feeling it was going to be in flashbacks.
And this is so great to be able to spend a significant amount of time with him.
He is spectacular.
He is.
In these flashbacks. And that is what's so exciting about it, is he gets to really sort of shine in these moments.
Eddie Izzard does contempt so well.
Yes, he's so sharp and quick-witted, even though he's missing
And he's, you know, one of the most impressive deaths in the history of movies is Quint in Jaws.
Yes.
Because Quint is in the shark's mouth, pulls out his machete, and starts hacking at the shark. He's not going to kill the shark. He's not going to save himself. But he is going to go down hacking at him.
Fighting.
And Abel Gideon is using this sharp, sharp wit, this biting, you know, what's it going to be like when people eat you, Hannibal?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He knows he's done for, but in those long moments, he knows he can tell Hannibal's in for the long haul.
Yes. He said
this is posthumous.
This is posthumous.
Yeah.
His fight or flight.
I've already got up and gone, he says.
Yes, this is posthumous, yeah.
I love the way they play it. And this is the lyrical dialogue of every conversation between Hannibal and Will Graham,
mm-hmm.
except with that contempt.
Contempt.
Because mm-hmm. Gideon is so over it, you know? Okay. Like, you really are the devil right off the bat.
Oh, the clinking of your hooves.
Yeah.
The clinking.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
And you smoked me in time.
I was thinking about something. You had mentioned this in the other podcast.
I love that.
This, but I was thinking of the you smoked me in time, and I'm the one who has no time. Like, he has... Basically, he feels like he's on borrowed time.
Mm-hmm.
Gideon is punny.
Yeah,
the irony of being smoked in time punny. And having no time.
Having no more time left.
Well, I was so happy that we had this discussion of taste and cannibalism.
Yes.
Do people taste different?
Everyone has their flavor.
Isn't that something you've been wondering from the beginning of this show? Because we watch this food porn, because it is food
porn.
It
is food porn.
And we sit here hungry for these things that Hannibal is cooking, and we think to ourselves...
Except for that fish jelly. I don't want the fish jelly.
No,
fish jelly.
Nobody wants the fish jelly.
Yeah.
Did you see on the gag reel when Lawrence Fishburne is like,
Yes. It's like, no.
They have all said... That was the worst thing they had to eat on the show.
Yeah.
It was pretty horrific to even look at.
I mean, I liked the way it was kind of like a diorama of fish eating.
But that's really all it was, is a diorama.
Big fish eating the little fish. You don't want to eat your science project. At least I've never wanted to eat my science project.
But you both are the same, right? You sit there looking at that thinking, I'd try it if it was put in front of me.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what it is that I said in this episode, I get hungry every single time
Even
I watch
if it was long pig, I'd probably try it.
And it's so beautiful.
I mean, it's already dead. Yeah. Who am I to turn away food? Seriously?
That exquisitely prepared? I mean,
yes.
Really?
Yes, Hannibal would have to prepare it.
Yes.
But I would eat that.
I would eat that.
Okay. Good. I'm glad we're all on the same
even liver.
Weird
like, I wouldn't
page.
Normally
and the fact that I'm
liver.
Getting to have, eat dinner with Hannibal is awesome. Because it's, a wonderful evening with a well-spoken and
he would
easy
love
on
to
the
have
eyes
you.
Man.
As long as I
but
make sure I'm not rude.
I'm not eating.
Oh, yeah. You keep your elbows off that table.
Oh, yes.
You use the appropriate
hands. I'd like to take
hands.
An etiquette lesson first. Because
go to classes.
I don't have that. Just not how I was raised.
So this flashback was the one where we realized that not only is it in black and white, mm-hmm. but it's also in CinemaScope widescreen.
Yes.
Which is something new for this show.
Oh, yes.
And I think what they did is they put all the flashbacks in CinemaScope, and then this specific flashback is in black and white.
Yeah, only the Gideon flashbacks are in this black and white. And it's a very... startling black and white.
It is. It's like really, really contrast.
Yes. High contrast. This isn't slightly sepia toned. This doesn't really have that old-timey or let's wistfully reminisce down memory lane.
It didn't start with Hannibal looking off to the side.
Right, exactly. And then everything goes soft.
Everything goes a little focus.
Or wavy. But high contrast. The grays actually don't have a whole lot of variety. They're very stark, cold grays. And the dark areas, especially when they do all these singles on Gideon.
Yeah.
The darkness is so striking. His eyes and the folds around his mouth and his face is so striking.
Especially in that last flashback, where they're looking at the camera. They're doing the Jonathan Demme thing, because Silence of the Lambs is famous for the fact that its characters speak to the camera.
Yes.
And that was credited as partially one of the reasons that it was so successful, is when Clarice is talking to Hannibal Lecter, you feel like you're talking to Hannibal Lecter, and he's looking into you, not just Clarice. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons I think Anthony Hopkins was able to sell it so well on 11 minutes of screen time.
Mm-hmm.
So going into that, that's something this show has never done before.
Right.
Which is impressive that in all this time they've never gone there. And this episode really revolves around bringing us in and bringing us deeper.
Mm.
And it has a lot of these gateways.
Didn't they do that when we were seeing Hannibal, then Will, then Hannibal, and it was Hannibal's voice, but Will's face.
Oh, in that weird...
They did that.
That could be.
They did do that once. At least once that I can remember.
They don't do it much on this show.
No, not much.
So when they do it, it's striking.
It is.
And for them to do it in essentially his last moments there. Yeah. Because poor Gideon is sitting there with one arm.
Yes.
Trying to eat snails.
Yes.
He was so pissed off with the clink. And I know that that's, I don't know if it's in all cultures, but it seems like it would be in all cultures. I know that in German culture, making sound at all with your utensils is considered extremely rude.
Well, Hannibal looks pissed about everything.
Yeah.
And we get that exchange, why do you think I'm allowing this, from Gideon? And Hannibal says, why do you think I'm allowing this? And it really just reinforces that he wants Will there. That's it.
Mm.
You know, he is tolerating Gideon as he deconstructs Gideon.
Mm-hmm.
But he wants Will.
Yeah.
And that's a reoccurring theme throughout the episode, that he wants Will to be there.
Hey, Gideon really throws that at him.
Mm-hmm.
I think these flashback scenes, these whole conversations, seem to be asking the questions that are rolling around in our head.
Yeah.
Deconstructing Hannibal in a way that no other character really has. And we've had, you know, granted, you know, it's like, you know, we've had some psychiatrists involved. Three seasons in, still bothers me that they're psychiatrists and not psychologists, but I will not split hairs on that.
There may also be psychologists involved.
Yeah. Well, psychiatrists only deal with medication. They don't do therapy. Only psychotherapists do therapy in the real world.
Some psychiatrists do.
Yeah, they will mix the two together.
Cross or straddle the line, but typically it's delineated.
Hannibal runs the
psychologist, psychiatrist.
Exactly. But, it seems that the only person who is able to really get to the inner workings of Hannibal is Abel Gideon.
Well, he got that sneak peek. Mm-hmm. He got that sneak peek when he was sitting at the dinner table and Will comes in.
Oh, yeah, when Will has his seizure.
Will has his episode, and you see Abel got into, like, the mind of Hannibal and Will's relationship, because he got to see how Hannibal was controlling Will, and how Will really wanted to break free of it. And then there was this, well, you're letting his brain literally cook inside his, you know, skull, and you're not going to do anything about it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So he got to see something that nobody else did. He was...
And lived, or at least...
And lived a little while longer to throw that back in Hannibal's face.
Yeah, because usually that would be it. There wouldn't be this.
Right.
I don't think there would ever be this conversation.
No.
You know, to have all this. And we get so much so many gifts given to us. And these, like, the one line that I think is my favorite in this entire episode is when he discusses cannibalism. And they have a whole talk about what cannibalism is, and that, you know, why can't we find the missing link? We ate them.
Yeah.
And then finally Hannibal turns him and says, it's only cannibalism if we're equals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, burn. Yeah. Sorry, you're just cattle to me.
Exactly. Eagle. That answers some, I mean, what a great insight.
Right. Mm-hmm. He doesn't see them as people.
Yes.
Or it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, there's that question that you posed way back in the beginning of our podcast where you were talking about, is he, like, truly the root of all evil, or is he just a person who's doing these things? So,
is he the devil?
Is he the devil?
Is he literally the devil?
Is he literally the devil? Or is he this person that just does really bad things? And I feel like if he's able to look at people more like cattle, it humanizes him. Hmm. More than it does demonize him. Like, he's not an otherworldly person if he has to.
It certainly takes away his, it's not sadistic if they're cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Because he also doesn't want them to suffer. He talked about how fear makes the meat taste
rancid.
Yeah. So he wants it to be humane. He wants, unless he's making a point. Mm-hmm. And in that case, he might cut your arm off and hang it in his snail garden,
yes, so that the snails can be sweetened with your red wine infused.
Yes, the red wine arm. And this is where we get the amazing line about what, you know, the snails are feeding so they taste better. Mm. Then Gideon's going to eat the snails so he'll taste better. Mm. Then Hannibal's going to eat Gideon. Imagine what you must taste like.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, and he throws the digs at him so many different times, and that's just one of them where you get that. Well, what is it going to be like when this happens to you?
Yeah.
You. Oh, yeah, he definitely throws that a lot. And it's also, you know, it makes the later scenes of people eating with Hannibal even that much more uneasy. I mean, they kind of... they don't do it very subtly in the scene with Anthony, because he basically comes right out and says, oh, look, these are the things that the Romans used to feed their livestock.
Gideon mentions specifically those things,
Things, exactly.
It's acorns and oysters.
And masala.
And masala.
Yeah. But it is, interesting. Now we see these little telltale markers, and it's sort of coming up in how he prepares things.
Yeah.
The whole meal. It's like, now I'm going to be sitting there and wondering, like, what is he...
Think Bedelia had any idea what she was eating before Anthony threw it out?
I don't know.
She had any concept that she was being flavored?
Her reaction was more of a, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Maybe I need to rethink this. But she recovered quickly. Because she has her glib retort, but I think in that there's a flash of a moment where she has a very frightening realization.
Yeah.
You know, because it's unlike Gideon, who's figured it out himself, about himself. He sees it all happening. You know, it's not just that, he's being, his flesh is being cooked in sauces with sugar cane and all these other things, or the snails and everything. He's sort of, getting the cycle of, I eat something and it makes me, and then you serve the savory thing. He's had time to process that.
When the best part is he's eating himself, so he is actually making himself taste better.
Yeah, and then that whole moment where it seems like he's going to stop eating. I don't have to eat.
I don't.
Yeah, he has his little petulant moment.
Yeah.
But then realizes that there's this wonderful food in front of him, and he's going to die.
Yeah.
So why not enjoy himself?
The fairy tale.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the best lines in the whole episode. Let it be a fairy tale, then.
Mm-hmm.
Once upon a time. And it's so sinister and so overdone and big, but it's so beautiful, because then they cut to the curtains opening.
Yeah.
And there are so much about eating and being eaten in fairy tales.
About the gingerbread house.
Yeah, there's the big bad wolf, there's mm-hmm. the witch who is cooking Hansel and Gretel. I mean, there's constant mm-hmm. references to eating. Villains routinely get eaten. They get pecked to death by birds. They get mm-hmm. eaten. You know, Hook lost his hand to a crocodile. Mm-hmm. Fairy tales are full.
And found it so tasty, he's coming back for the rest of me. Actually a line.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that they go with that, because is Hannibal aware that he's the villain? And if so, if he's willing to make it a fairy tale and he's aware he's the villain, he knows that the knight will show up and slay him?
Or because he knows that it's just fairy tales.
Sometimes the villain gets away.
Yeah, and it's the real world.
You know? That's true.
Can he be the fairy tale villain? But in the real world, there's ways to get around that. And there's not always... You know, in the real world is not always a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
So
real world doesn't always end up with good defeating evil.
Right. So he may be willing to play the fairy tale role because it's fun and it's interesting and it's intriguing. You know, but I think he is really not concerned with the outcome, because in the real world, a lot of villains do get away.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a very clever villain.
He is.
Clever boy.
See how he runs.
Yeah.
Clever boy.
Let's jump forward in time to the moments immediately after our big finale last season.
Mm.
So Bedelia returns home after being pardoned for shoving her arm down a guy's throat.
Essentially. Mm.
And her perfume is still there, the perfume that she left out for Hannibal.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes right to the bar.
I thought that was...
Oh, yeah.
And pours a beautiful drink in a beautiful etched, cut, crystal glass.
Slow motion pour.
I mean, we need just this episode. It's like if every beautiful moment from the finale of last season, which really upped the game to such an extent
mm-hmm.
that I've never seen anything like that on television.
Yeah.
And this episode, almost entirety of the episode, has that beauty. The close-ups, the dream logic, the slow motion, the droplets, the blood, everything.
Oh, yeah, the exquisite transitions.
Yes.
Between scenes, the time lapse.
We're just not watching time lapse in Baltimore. We're watching time lapse in Italy.
In Paris. Exquisite. You know,
the stores, even. The store she walks in.
Exactly.
The train station. Everything is just... Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's like you wind up spending a good majority just with your mouth hanging open. Mm-hmm. Because
so many shots in this episode
beautiful.
Need to be captured and put as my computer wallpaper. So many shots.
The motorcycle, when it goes by, when we realized in HD that the light at the top of the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, yeah, that shot where it's driving by the Eiffel Tower.
Streaking across the clouds.
Even just the gas ignition
mm-hmm.
was so clear and crisp.
Yeah.
You've got the flames, you've got the exhaust going through all the way to the mm-hmm. outside of the motorcycle on the way out.
I also love the reflection of the rear Dr. Fell walking away.
Yeah, the impossible shot.
The impossible
with the
shot.
Camera right in front of it.
Yeah.
It's weird. I think we, even non... cinema literate people.
That's me.
Well, I think we feel odd when we know the camera is there and there's a mirror and the camera is not in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
It feels odd. It feels unnerving because we know it's impossible.
It has to be reflected in that. Yeah. Exactly.
But before we go to Europe.
Okay.
Okay. We are
Let's
in,
go back to Hannibal
we are
showering
in,
off
yes.
the remains of what the internet has decided is called the Red Dinner.
The Red Dinner.
That's right. It's called the Red Dinner.
The Red Dinner. The bloodbath
So we have another dream.
At the end of last episode. Well, we have this wonderful callback, because one of the most beautiful shots in that episode is Hannibal stepping out into the rain and wiping off his face, and just, it's the Shawshank Redemption shot, but in such a horrible fashion.
Right.
Because Hannibal is shedding that persona. He's taken off the person suit.
Yes.
And now he's the monster can breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And so here, Hannibal is showering off the last vestiges of this humanity, the last bits of all of Will's humanity that he got all over
him. Droplets mixed with blood
that
are so gorgeous, because it's not just water and it's not just blood.
It's that blend where you see the tendrils.
They're dancing together.
Yeah.
And, oh, like I said, just
viscosity.
Yeah.
Yay, physics.
Exactly. that's totally what it is. It's the when the water falls and it comes back up, and how the blood and the water
move at different
speeds because of viscosity. And it just creates these, you know, the blood infused ends of the droplets and the clear water at the base. And it's like art.
It's amazing technically that we've gotten to a point where digital video can do these kinds of frame rates, because that's really what's responsible for this. It's extremely fast, where you see the water actually not being fluid, where you see the individual bits of it. It's extremely slow, where you see the corona come up around it.
Mm.
And yeah, it just, like, everything about this, nothing about this show screams NBC's Thursday night, 9 o'clock.
Right.
Nothing about it.
It's totally
stunning. Every time I remember that this show is on NBC.
You're like, what?
What?
You gotta throw in, and it's not just the beautiful tendrils of blood mixing with water, but there's also Mads Mikkelsen's physique in the shower.
And
that
was
a feast for the eye.
And the appropriately placed wine glass.
Bedelia with her wine glass and gun.
Yes.
Well, I think it's actually a whiskey.
Okay, her glass,
her glass
that is obscuring.
I'm putting whiskey in the glass.
You're putting whiskey in the glass.
A very, very fancy, like, $500 bottle of whiskey. That's what I pictures. That's her drink.
Because she does pour herself a stiff drink.
She does.
It's definitely.
She's just gotten away with something.
Yeah.
It's like a scotch. Because
she has that moment of sort of like relief satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she thinks that it's all
relief
past.
Of action.
Yeah, exactly. Until
and then
she
she's
hears
like,
the shower. And then
hell.
I love the shot where you could see just sort of that
in her ostentatious bathroom.
Yes, and you can tell that Mass is very tan everywhere but where his swim trunks are. That was one pale
ass
on the other side of that shower door.
Yes, we were paying attention.
Yeah.
Clearly, just like direct close attention.
And then, you know, you get it. And he comes out and he's just covered wet and toweling off.
In slow motion.
That was like
And
the men.
And the men.
You know what this is. This is Brian Fuller in the editing bay saying, no, slower.
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 Slower. Let's rewind that.
Yeah.
They're going to love
this.
They're going to love this.
Exactly. Because then we get, you know, the conversation with Bedelia. You know,
where she repeats, what have you done, Hannibal?
What have you done, Hannibal?
What have you done?
Oh, and we can't forget that both Miko and I noticed the bruises.
Yes.
The amazingly done bruises.
I also noticed the bruises.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thank you. I just need to be acknowledged.
Cooper. There you go. I threw you in there.
Yeah.
All of us noticed.
Threw me a frickin' bone.
Because usually,
his
especially in
were
television, that's
extensive.
A detail they will often just overlook.
Yeah. And if you think about the way that he had gotten hit in that one spot by Jack,
just kept pounding
and you're thinking that, okay, he's got to have cracked ribs, he's got to be hurting, and he looked like he had gone through a prize fight.
Oh, yeah, he had bruising and contusions all around his elbow.
You see his knuckles
and his
are
knuckles.
Ripped when he gets out of the shower.
Yeah,
it's
even
really
though he's cleaned
good
off.
really solid continuity.
They are paying attention.
You feel like this is that same night.
Mm-hmm.
There's no artifice here. This is reality.
And they are respecting their viewers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And going, they're going to appreciate this extra time we took on this piece of reality. Mm-hmm. Of, okay, what's going to happen when you get into a fight? Doesn't matter how conditioned you are and how good you are, if you're going to get in a knockout, drag out, just like beating each other to death
mm-hmm.
kind of fight, you're going to have tears and bruises yeah. and deep, like that awful, you know, greenish, purplish,
yep.
blue, and blood vessels popped and all of it. You're going to see that. And I thank you for not dumbing it down or thinking that I won't notice.
What yes, I loved about know. Hannibal in this scene is not only is he physically bruised, but he's very clearly emotionally bruised.
Mm-hmm.
When he talks about... that's Hannibal posing. Can I get dressed first? When she asks him about it and he says that she's in no position to ask because she ended our professional relationship. And then when Bedelia asks about Will Graham, and he says Will Graham was not a suitable substitute for therapy,
mm-hmm.
Hannibal is raw. He's upset. Mm-hmm. He misses Will already.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's wonderful because it shows the depth of it,
mm-hmm.
the regret in it. Because Hannibal was, I mean, that is one of the most moving things in the entire series thus far, was Hannibal's pain when he had to take Will out of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, that's what it is. He saw no other way.
Mm-hmm.
He gave Will the great gift. He gave him the option to be like him, and Will chose not to. And to do that to Will hurt him. It, you know, it's so cliche. It hurt him. This is going to hurt me as much as it hurts you, or more than it hurts you. But I strangely believe it in this case that Will was physically hurt, mm-hmm. but Hannibal was a man who is not used to being hurt.
Right.
Was really hurt
mm-hmm.
by it.
And probably also the whole process of you know, I've taken off my person suit. How often does that happen to him?
Right.
Where he is driven to this point where he has to let the, you know.
Unleash the monster.
Pretty much, exactly. The curtain is drawn and everything is shown. Granted, it was only to a few people, but...
But usually those people are already dead, mm-hmm. like Gideon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He is already dead when he sees the monster. So you want to go to the present? We open with our, essentially, a car commercial, or maybe a T-Mobile commercial, you know, that one where the sexy T-Mobile girl is driving her bike across country.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, and it sounds really silly, but that is in no way a negative, because car commercials are some of the most beautiful uses of framing and shots and beauty of a thing, you know, and really when we open with that fire inside the engine, it's all about the beauty of this thing that is an extension of Hannibal in this new world.
Mm-hmm.
And that new world is Paris, which is also beautiful.
Travelogue opening, too.
It is.
Paris. We get to see quite a number of locations as he's...
Well, and we get this thing. Okay, so we've been a fairly contained show thus far.
Mm-hmm.
We've been drawing rooms. We've been offices. We've been dinner
lots
tables.
Lots of basic sets.
And
only a few locations and one or two swing sets. Yeah.
So to lead with the vast openness mm-hmm. of these shots and then have Hannibal pull off the helmet and it be Hannibal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're seeing him in a way we've never seen him before. A leather jacket.
Yes.
You know, he is not the three-piece suit, mm-hmm. gigantic knotted tie we've seen.
Oh, exactly. He's scruffy.
Mm-hmm. And he's hunting.
Yes.
When he searches the party, when he scans the party, and
then there's the prey.
The prey,
they reverse, and they do that beautiful slow rack focus. to the hunter.
Yes. And then to Anthony Dumas.
Yeah.
The man who just walked into the wrong party.
No, happened to unfortunately decide that Hannibal was an interesting person in the room.
An interesting person who was staring at Dr. Fell with the thinly veiled disdain of someone who knows him.
Yes.
Well, I think it's more of a he was in the wrong place at the wrong time because he was close to Dr. Fell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He had been his TA. Yeah. Not close enough to like him, but...
Close enough to not like him.
To not like him, exactly.
And they have this great exchange about dissection. One can appreciate another's words without dissecting them, though on occasion, dissection is the only thing that'll do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I love how Anthony is really just trying to impress Hannibal.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, it takes me 6 months to write a single line. And Hannibal just said, why?
Why? Because poetry.
Poetry is hard.
It's hard.
Poetry is hard.
But this guy does is just, he just throws the stuff in a book every 6 months. And he criticizes it. Yeah, it's true. It's a bit whiny.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, Anthony is a whiny character. He's the kind of guy who really thinks he's a player, but is not. And...
Yeah, he's come to this party and decided that he has to drink champagne two at a time. Yeah,
double fisting it. Yes. It's that kind of party.
There's nothing that makes you look more like you're a rookie at this, or that you're sort of poor on that poor writer, poet, actor level.
Yeah, I better drink plenty here because I'm not going to get any at home.
Exactly. All he needed was also to have a plate balanced on one of those champagne that
full
had
shrimp cocktail.
Exactly.
Yes, he has the entire shrimp cocktail.
All of the shrimp cocktail. The shrimp a cocktail. Bowl of shrimp and double fisting champagne.
Yes.
And talking with his mouth full.
Yes.
But see, you know, what's...
Not quite.
What's interesting about this is they paint this really strong picture of Dr. Fell and give us a good reason why Hannibal would dislike him. It's not just about replacing him. That's the function of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if Dr. Fell is the kind of guy who shits out a book every 6 months,
mm-hmm.
and is that kind of academic, his very existence is an offense to Hannibal. His very place in the world, that he is taking up space at the, what is it, the Palazzo?
I don't know.
Talking about Dante in Florence. It's offensive.
Mm.
And that's the rudeness. That's his existence is
rude. But we don't get to see it the way we do with the other professor who...
Soliato.
Soliato, yeah.
With Professor Soliato.
Professor Soliato. With him, it's very clear what kind of offense he's given to Hannibal.
It's
or given
his disdain
the reason.
For...
But we don't get to see Dr.
Well,
Fell
but that's the
do
thing.
It. It's all hearsay.
It's Dr. Fell isn't even deigning to interact, except for in that pretentious professor way, that, okay, let me explain to you what you don't understand about this.
Yeah.
You know, Soliato is obvious. Soliato is sort of beneath Hannibal, even. He's rude in that way that's just like, oh, well, you're not even worth my time. You're like a fly. I'll swat you if I have a chance. But I'm going to go after the guy who will taste so good.
Right.
Because of how awful he is.
And you kind of get through the exchange between Hannibal and Anthony that Hannibal's been watching this guy for a while.
Yeah.
So everything that Anthony is telling him is not new.
It's just confirming.
I mean, come on, he blinks his eyes to agree.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You don't have to say anything. Just blink if you agree.
Yeah, exactly. But I think he's been watching him enough and has probably seen him in enough of these interactions where he's probably experienced the rudeness of Dr. Fell in person at some point, even if from afar, or enough stories have come about from, about how he acts.
Well, it's possible he's known him for a long time, too. Or at least known of him for a long time. Because we do get the idea, and the book Hannibal, which this storyline is very heavily drawn from, if not exactly, we do get this idea that that Hannibal has been interested in this specific place, this specific job for a long time. Yeah. This is his bailiwick. This is where he goes to unwind. This is Hannibal's idea of vacation. Yes. Lecturing about Dante in the Palazzo. Hannibal, I love how Hannibal interacts with Dr. Fell briefly.
Yeah.
Outside. Bonsoir. And then he's there at his... Bonsoir. Yeah. And he's there at his house when he arrives. Bonsoir.
Then he's cooking. Bonsoir.
No, it's Dr. Fell saying bonsoir.
Bonsoir. Yes,
like,
right.
Questioning. And then Hannibal's like flat, matter-of-fact bonsoir. Bonsoir. Like,
and that amazing...
That's the last word
that amazing macro photography of the steak and the liver
the
being
liver.
Cooked.
The
knife and the wine. Oh, my God. God.
The garnish.
Mm-hmm.
Just gorgeous. Yeah. And when that woman arrives, it's like a horror movie. You
it
see
is.
Her opening the door, and I mean, the only way they could have overplayed this would be to really just bring up, like, Mozart's Requiem here.
Yeah.
Just to overplay the entire thing. But they don't overplay it. They underplay it. So she walks in and sees him there and sort of looks around the corner,
like,
because
where's
Dr. Fell?
Yeah.
And then Hannibal's just... Bonsoir.
Bonsoir. Yeah.
And you're next.
And that's it. And we get our opening credits there. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the show did not waste any time revealing the three survivors of the massacre.
Mm-hmm.
At least the three credited survivors.
Credited
we don't know what happened to Abigail yet.
Right.
I think we can assume what happened to Abigail. But... Lawrence Fishburne's in the credits. Carolyn DeHavernes is in the credits.
Mm-hmm.
And Will, I mean, we knew Will was not going to die. I mean, Will Graham still has a role to play in Red Dragon.
Exactly. And we get a delightful introduction to Italy.
Yes. Well, first, that's our fairy tale split open. And Hannibal and Dr. Du Maurier are dancing at a gala in this gorgeous room. This insanely elaborate, I mean, every single location in this episode is ornate and beautiful and clearly European.
Oh,
and
yes.
Everything about it is just, this is where Hannibal belongs. But it's also so interestingly different from Hannibal's natural state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his place is this dark, And sort of sparse, except
more austere
for
but kind of surroundings.
I mean, not like Chilton's place, which is just, you know, granite and spiral staircases. Really,
that was weird. It was very sparse. And
I think Chilton's location was a case of the locations manager saying, "I've got this place. It's amazing.
Yes.
We need to use it for something."
It's just so weirdly. I really someone thinking that this is tasteful and modern and really really hip, and but at the same time you're kind of like, this is weird or not hip kind
right.
of thing. It's over-designed.
Over-designed.
Yeah.
It's the kind of place that a guy who does not understand what over-designed is
exactly.
would get excited about. So we have Professor Soliato here, goading Hannibal for not being Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he might have something, an original letter from Dante Alighieri himself, and he wouldn't know it in his non-Italian hand.
Right. Well, because he can only speak medieval Italian. What if a Florentine came and, you know, it's sort of like, well, you know what you've learned in books about this one time period.
Right.
But do you know this dialect?
So, you know, this guy is every blonde thug from 1980s teen movies.
He's the quarterback.
Yes. This is William Atherton from Ghostbusters right here.
Right.
But then we have Bedelia going,
Dad.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
No, let's go dance.
I love how Bedelia tries multiple times to just pull him away.
Yeah.
And he makes it worse, too.
She's like, okay, if you don't want to die on the dance floor right now,
come on, let's dance.
With me.
And Hannibal pulls out Dante's first sonnet.
Yes.
Which has that, I mean, we don't know what it has because they didn't give us subtitles.
No.
Which I like that they didn't give us subtitles, because then we focus on the beauty of the language rather than trying to discern what it means. But Hannibal references, and I read this sonnet because it is also the lyrics to Vide Cormium, which is the beautiful aria from the movie Hannibal that was written by Patrick Cassidy and Hans Zimmer. And we got a little bit of that in, I think, at the end of the first season, when Hannibal's walking down the corridor to visit Will in the basement of the Baltimore Correctional Facility. I believe that's where we heard that. But so to use that, it's about there's a line, he ate his burning heart.
Yes.
And this is imagery that we come back to multiple times. Mm-hmm. This is the recessive in this episode. We just keep coming back to the burning heart and the eating of
the
heart.
It's going to be pivotal at the end of this episode.
It is. But Hannibal thinks we should give him a pass because he's killed hardly anyone.
I know.
I love that
in the
line.
Residence. And he seems proud of it. It's just like, you know what? I must be at home here.
I've been a good little boy.
Well, after taking off the person, so you'd expect there to just be bodies everywhere. So.
Let the bodies hit the floor.
Oh, boy. Thank you, Drowning Pool.
Where Bedelia says, you no longer have ethical concerns, you have aesthetic concerns.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very interesting, and I'm willing to give the show a pass, but I find it very interesting that nobody knows what Dr. Fell looks like in order to say, oh, by the way, you're not Dr. Fell.
Yeah.
First of all, he has a beard, and he looks completely different than you, and probably 10 years older. And here's his picture on the back of the paperback copy of the book that I'm holding, because Anthony showed us a copy of one of his books that has his picture on it. So Hannibal takes place in this weird netherworld where technology exists when it's needed and doesn't exist when it's not needed.
Yeah, you know, that they're going to hire him without a background check. And you're not going to see his ID pop up, you know, unless he's
America's most wanted.
Unless he's that damn good. He went back into every...
And changed absolutely. Hannibal editing... Wikipedia Italian.
Putting his own
picture in there.
Going back and changing.
And meanwhile, Jack Crawford is at
Facebook
home being
pages
like, wait a minute, that looks like Hannibal Lecter.
Something tells me Interpol would be all over this.
Yes. I think that's part of the, you know, in the book Hannibal, which takes place in 96, I think it came out in 99, but I'm pretty sure it takes place earlier. So we are talking about a time where these technologies were not readily available, where they were sending pictures out by fax rather than, there was no easy way.
He also altered his appearance.
He did, yeah. Well, and Hannibal of the book had the extraneous digit that he had removed, and that was how they found him.
Mm-hmm.
And it made more sense than the way in the movie, but, you know.
Yeah.
I'm willing to forgive the show this mild cinema sin here.
Exactly.
Because it is just so good. If it were a lesser show, I'd be like, wait a minute, hold on.
What is this?
Nobody knows what Dr. Fell looks like?
Yeah.
Has anybody ever seen Dr. Fell? Soliato does not know what Dr. Fell looks like.
Right.
Exactly. Dr. Fell doesn't have like a TED Talk or something.
No, but I want to see Hannibal's TED Talk as Dr. Fell.
Yes. Ooh.
We see a little of it later.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of.
Speaking of Hannibal being proud of things, he's extremely proud of winning the job fairly.
Yeah.
On his merits.
Yeah, on his merits entirely. I just killed the guy who had the job before, but really, it's fair. It's fair.
Once the vacancy was made,
yes,
I won it fair and square.
And he won't kill Soliato because it would disturb the peace.
Yes,
and it would disturb his perfect "I've killed hardly anyone" record.
Right.
And hardly anyone really strongly implies it's at least more than one.
It is more than Dr. Fell and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
He has killed more than that.
So they have this wonderful little couple exchange here, the how was your day exchange, essentially. And Bedelia still believes she is in conscious control of her actions. And given Hannibal's history, she considers that a good day.
A good day.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And that's a throwback to the book.
It is.
Where Clarice is under...
Well, there's a lot of question about this. And one of the, you know, I don't want to bring in Brian Fuller's spoilers, because they're spoilers.
Yeah.
But Brian Fuller has talked about how Bedelia is not drugged.
Yeah.
She may be manipulated by Hannibal,
right,
but she's allowing herself to be manipulated, mm-hmm, because she's so curious.
Mm-hmm.
That is the drug that's gotten Bedelia here. So this moment is her confirming that she has conscious faculties and just is not leaving, is trying to get taken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see her go and sit in front of the train station camera.
Yeah. Look at the camera.
And make sure she nods to the police.
Yeah.
And all these things to get noticed.
Yes. Yes.
But she's not going to walk away. And I think that's because she doesn't want to say to Hannibal, I'm leaving. She wants to say to Hannibal, they took me away.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It absolves her of that responsibility. I wasn't actually trying to leave. They found me. And they took me away.
And she has one of the most beautiful shots in the entire episode, where she climbs into that ornate copper tub.
Yeah.
And just drifts under and then sinks.
Mm-hmm.
And into the murky water, yeah.
Kind of white, soapy water, into that inky
black. Yeah. Inky, yes, black.
And we see her just drop, you know, with her angelic form. Yeah. With what looked like a surprising amount of nudity, again, for NBC.
For NBC, I was rather stunned.
I mean, I didn't see any nipples.
I saw nipple.
Did you?
I saw their outline.
Let me be clear. I was looking.
I was looking, too.
Well, you know, I think we all were looking.
I was looking pretty hard, though.
Gillian Anderson.
But do you know that that's Gillian Anderson? Because I made sure.
That is actually probably not Gillian Anderson.
They don't show her face.
And it's not.
The arm is
and probably not because of nudity. It's probably not her, because it's submerging an actress in a giant tank.
Right, she has to be able to do that free fall.
And that is probably a second unit thing. And,
yeah.
But,
and then you've got bubbles over the... It was the arm in front of the face for the side shot,
yeah,
and then the bubbles over the face. I was like, there's no way to know that's her. But I was still looking.
But I love that. That's purely metaphorical. That's the descent. Mm-hmm. She's descending into it. She's allowing herself to descend. At the same time, we have these the metaphorical suicide by bathtub. We have a little shout-out to Nightmare on Elm Street with falling into the depths,
yeah,
and then bolting awake, mm-hmm, back in the tub.
Or even when they pull in on the tub and her lying in it, it felt very much, very shining,
mm-hmm,
like a moment in the shining.
I think for me, because I was thinking that and when you looked over and said it, mm-hmm, and I think for me it's the greens in, mm-hmm, the palette, because
and
Room 237 is very green.
Shot too.
And the music. Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, the music.
With the slow tracking forward, and there's nothing, it's all static.
Yeah.
And all you're doing is slowly pushing in. And it was sort of like that ethereal sort of music around it, and all the greens, and that waiting for something to happen feeling.
Waiting for the blood to come out of the faucet.
Yes,
yeah, exactly.
They were like,
yeah,
it's going to be, nope.
This one.
No.
This one isn't
blood? No.
Every dark droplet looked like a bloody droplet.
Well, because it was the same scene that we get when we're in Will's cell.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
We're staring
of
at the faucet, the, what can we call it, sink face?
Sink face,
sink,
yeah.
Sink face.
We're staring at the sink, waiting for it to turn to blood and, like, start overflowing. That's,
yeah,
what I was expecting.
Yeah.
But instead, we got the shout out to what happens to Alana in bed.
Oh yeah, inky
yeah, where
Alana.
She's covered in the inky black.
Yeah, but I was there. I was right there with you, going, "Blood? No,
yeah, yeah.
No,
just waiting for it to happen."
And this one, no.
Probably the second most beautiful shot in the episode is Bedelia walking in front of that gorgeous building in Florence.
Yes,
where she's wearing her blue, I'm Carmen Sandiego in a different palette outfit, with her gorgeous hat that,
yes,
was aggressively color corrected here into the green.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could tell they were pushing things to get that Hannibal style,
yes.
Intense color, but they weren't quite getting it from the real piece. So they were definitely went in and did some serious color timing at the end of this episode to get what they wanted.
Well, but, and they do that in every episode of this show. Oh, that is very much one of their things.
I think it was just one of the... It was a brief moment where you almost saw it. And I really think only... It's something only we would see. I don't think it's anything that anybody else...
Oh, no. Really,
yeah.
And it was gorgeous regardless. It was just one of the... It's an artifice that we as people who know what it looks like when you push color like that,
mm-hmm.
notice. There was also a single shot in the episode just before they sabered the corks out of the champagne bottles that felt aggressively video to me. I have a very specific eye when it comes to things that make things look like video versus film. And this is shot, we say video, this is shot digitally. It's just not film. The black and white sequences also had a little bit of that feel to them. So Bedelia goes to Vera Doll.
Yeah.
Which is a store in the book Hannibal. It may be a store in the real world.
Actually, it's the wine, one of the wines that they list. When they give a long list, I believe Clarice does, when they try to find a way to, sort of capture him, that he has very specific tastes.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I found the line too in the book. And now I wish I had written it down where they're listing all these things. And that, Vera Doll 1929 was one of the things that he has ordered and would possibly look for. So, they sort of tag those things in their searches so that if anybody in the world orders those things, it might be him.
It's like the predecessor to Amazon.
Yes.
It's like, oh, we see you bought this. You would like this.
You might like this.
Do you need to buy more?
And while Bedelia is buying her fancy cheeses and fancy wines here.
And I feel like she's buying the feed. Like, yeah. The animal feed.
And she's probably buying acorn. She's
And
later when she's in there, she sees the rabbit, the freshly killed hare with its bleeding nose.
Well, the first dead animal we come across is the bird laying there.
Oh, yeah, the bird with the grapes entwined in its feet.
And then the second time we see the rabbit.
Freshly killed animals.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Hannibal is studying with his desk full of books and slides, and he's prepping his extemporaneous speech about Dante. He comes out well-dressed with a portfolio under his arm and without a tie.
Yes.
Which I liked.
He gets not necessarily more casual in this one, but we definitely see less of the buttoned up suit, tie, every piece in place, Hannibal. We get to see different, like, bow ties, a no jacket, sort of around the house Hannibal that we don't
really. Lounging around the house.
Your common everyday Hannibal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the white shirt that with the sleeve slightly rolled up and the little apron on.
Yes.
That Hannibal.
Yes. That we usually only get to see when he's cooking, So it's fun to see Hannibal about the house.
But he runs into Antony.
Yes.
And gives him the most overdone line in all of Thomas Harris's work. My wife and I would love to have you for dinner. I feel like this should be the last time they make that joke. This show has used it and abused it. He's said it to multiple people. Maybe we don't need another "I would like to have you for dinner" line.
This particular episode, had a plethora of puns that had to do with
this episode is very funny.
Oh, it is.
And at this, I mean, it's very disturbing and very upsetting, but it's also very funny. Mm-hmm. And it's funny not in the way that winks at the audience as much, the way the movie Hannibal got, the way Red Dragon sort of was, but funnier in just this is an amusing situation here. So we get tiki music, which I love.
So do I.
The score in this episode is incredibly eclectic and odd. You know, we have at times just single note organ music, which is reminded me of Interstellar, where people said that Hans Zimmer fell asleep on the keyboard. And we have this really odd 60s/70s synth that comes right out of the Italian horror from the era, scored by Goblin, you know, that type of music.
Well, and what, it's funny because it's smacked of a favorite band of mine, Tikiaki Orchestra. And then when I researched it, it was, in a way, very similar. It is a modern composer, a modern musician who is taking...
in the milieu.
Milieu of the, sort of, you know, the Italian-Latin jazz of the 60s and 70s, and, you know, reworking it. And not making it modern, but reveling in that, the period quality of it.
Yeah.
And it is. It's like you feel like you could be sitting at a tiki bar... you know, having a drink with an umbrella in it.
A little bit of ultra lounge.
Exactly.
Here for you.
Very ultra lounge here. But I think it really works because there is that feeling for me of the, you know, these Italian movies of the 60s.
Yeah. The swinging movies of the 60s, in fact.
Oh, there we go.
Which is funny because this is, Hannibal chose this music for their dinner party. Which is very different from any music he's ever chosen for a dinner party.
Which would totally make sense, because this, you know, is an Italian musician.
Yeah.
You know, this is not an American person that whose music has been thrown in. Antonello Pagliotti is, you know, pretty much an Italian artist, and has done films as well as his own music. So it would totally make sense that he's got Antonio's recent album, and Lulu just happens to be on it. And
I like to think that Hannibal is watching the Mario Bava films. You know, he sits down with Bedelia and shows her Suspiria, and she's just very upset by it and doesn't want to watch it again, but he wants to watch it again. And leans over and says, "Watch this part.
That's it.
Watch this part."
And Suspiria just is amazingly vibrant in color.
It is.
In a disturbing way, the way Hannibal has a tendency to be.
So Dante wrote that fear is almost as bitter as death.
But Dante didn't write... Dante wasn't dead when he wrote it?
Yeah. So basically that's Bedelia saying, Dante didn't know shit.
Right.
You know nothing.
You know nothing,
Dante Alighieri. So this is an interesting threesome here. Antony eating with Bedelia and Hannibal. Bedelia is trying not to eat anything with a central nervous system.
Exactly. And this is coming right on the heels of the snails and Gideon.
Yes.
And, you know, the whole idea.
Imagine what you must taste
like. Making somebody tastier. And here she is eating those self-same things. And we even get Tony telling us that this is what the Romans...
And the snails had no idea they're going to be eaten is the last part of that scene. And Bedelia realizes that she is going to be eaten in this scene.
In this scene. It has that frightening moment of realization. A lot of this dinner sequence seems to be her realizing the reality of what's going on here. It's possible that before this happened, the other murders that Hannibal has perpetrated were outside of her fear field of influence. That maybe they were all done while she was.
And this one he brought home for dinner.
Yeah, and now she's sitting there and she's meeting the meat. So this uncomfortableness.
This is the lobster he has chosen from the tank.
Exactly.
I love the body joke of my husband has a very sophisticated palate. He's very particular about the way I taste.
Yes.
And that gives Anthony the, what?
Isn't that kind of party?
It's not that kind of party.
I love how Hannibal is just lets Bedelia hang uncomfortably.
But he looks back over at her like, yeah?
With that little smile.
It's like, I'm game if you are. I mean, right.
Are we going to do this?
We could do this. We could just do it. Right now.
Okay. Then he reads her body language and her facial expressions.
It's not that kind of party.
It's not that kind of party. But Bedelia is
And he's
you.
So disappointed, too. He's like, you were just getting interested.
Yeah.
Right. He's disappointed. Man.
We don't get to see that kind of playfulness on Hannibal's face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a genuine, I'm enjoying myself smile.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying myself in the company of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Even with Will, he was rarely enjoying himself. He liked the idea of
yes.
Will. He liked what Will brought him, but he wasn't having a good old time, mm-hmm. you know?
There's something really... uncomfortable when he smiles.
He's like a shark.
Yes.
You know, and like when we see him later with the black eyes, he's
yes.
just like a shark.
Oh, when they do that to him, it's frightening. How they light that where it just looks like he is just totally black.
Yeah.
Yeah, dead eyes.
When those black eyes roll over white, the doll's eyes. And then he goes, and Hannibal tells him about the lecture that Dr. Fell is giving.
Right. Or what?
And he should come by.
He should come by.
And I love the, well, what would you have me do?
Yeah. Let him go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope. He's going to toss that mouse around for a little while longer.
Just for fun. Just for shits and giggles.
Exactly.
So, and Hannibal is lecturing in front of slides. I was so excited that this scene was in this. I love this so much from Hannibal the book, Hannibal the movie, his lectures on Dante. And in Hannibal, the lectures are very directed, like very directed. Like we're talking about hanging and disemboweling. And moments later, Hannibal hangs and disembowels someone.
Yes.
And it's very ironic, and it's very pointed, and it's very much, look at what you're getting yourself into if you want to come at me. You want to come at me?
Come at me, bro.
Come at me.
And
don't tease me, bro.
And I thought for sure that this was going to be Antony's fate. Mm-hmm. Because you know this character is not making it out alive.
I thought the same thing. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, he's going to be hanging out of a window.
Yeah. Yep. So this is a wonderful example of, now that the show has caught up to the literature, ways it can surprise us even more by making us think it's going to go with the same directions. This is why I can't wait to see Red Dragon.
To see where it's going to go, exactly. How much?
Because we've already played a lot of these games. You know, we've already played the flaming wheelchair.
Yes.
So are they going to give us another flaming wheelchair? Are they going to imply something and then give us something completely different?
They're not going to repeat.
And probably far more horrifying.
Yeah. But, you know, getting to do these Dante lectures also gives us the beautiful cinematic moment or television moment of the superimposing of the, Lucifer's face over Hannibal's.
Yes, indeed. With the wings spread out and back, which I feel is like a direct shout out to the Red Dragon.
The eyes lined right up.
Well, the terrifying three eyes of Satan there. And just like it... It's so upsetting to see Hannibal's suit beneath that.
Yeah, there's a lot in what's being said. It's almost very similar to the weight of the dialogue in the flashback scenes. It is leading us in one way into thinking of where Anthony's death is going, but he's saying so much. He's having this interesting sort of subtext conversation with Bedelia.
Oh yeah, well it's taking the Judas Iscariot story about hanging and I make my own home be my gallows.
Yeah, well, the that moment that he, you know, that he touches her shoulder.
He says the word betrayal, as he puts his hand on Bedelia's shoulder.
Yes.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. When he says that line about making his home the gallows, and we've got the indication of earlier in the episode with Bedelia saying that, you know, he's more concerned with aesthetics and that he's, you know, sort of letting go a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
And he's more about appearances instead of keeping or maintaining.
Yeah, absolutely.
Appearances. Do you think maybe this is kind of like a murder by cup scenario where he's...
If I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down in this beautiful, spectacular... I wouldn't be surprised if that's something that's running through his head when he says this. Because this is not only about betrayal of... It's not only Bedelia's betrayal. It's Will's betrayal. Mm-hmm. His betrayal of Will when he gutted him, because he gutted him.
With a linoleum knife.
With a linoleum knife, yes. There's a lot going on in this little discussion. And Anthony thinks he's so in charge of this scene when he comes up to talk to him. And he even plays it like, look how good I can be with this. When
among the torture instruments.
He has no idea.
Because he tells Soliato that he was Fell's TA at Cambridge.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so I know enough the about him not to share the stories.
Yes.
Man.
Oh, you wish you knew Hannibal's story, but you don't.
Yeah, what wickedness.
You never would have gone
attention.
Home with him had you known.
talk about scary moments after when they're having the discussion about what wickedness has your attention.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, and that, when he turns around and we see Hannibal, he has that dramatic, like, I'm going to tell scary stories by the fire, uplight.
Yeah.
There's these moments where you're like, okay, right now you should just run away, because
that's
scary.
Dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we can twist ourselves into all manner of uncomfortable positions,
and he's here to untwist him in a way.
Oh, you don't
want to
know what you're getting
beneficial.
Yourself into.
Oh, and then painful pun. You found him as distasteful as I did.
Oh, yeah, yes. Dr. Fell, you found him as distasteful as I did.
Quite
on the contrary. Yes.
I found him
that
quite
one
tasty.
I can go along with. I don't mind tasty puns.
Tasty puns.
I am over having an old friend for dinner.
Okay.
I mean, it was incredibly clever.
Okay.
When we first heard it in Silence of the Lambs, it was incredibly clever.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's not as clever anymore. So they need to stop doing it.
Okay.
But no, I don't mind the, on the contrary, tasteful, that kind of thing. I like that.
Okay.
And Bedelia is, she's set. She's going. She's got her bag packed. She's gone. She's gone.
I'm
over.
Out of
it's
here.
Over. I'm out of here.
And then this is definitely a throwback to like horror movies where you get the slow.
No, you know what? I kind of felt like, and there's nothing to indicate this. I kind of felt like Bedelia was sitting in that foyer debating whether or not to leave. And then she started hearing something downstairs and was like, okay, well, I'm going now. And, I can't.
Like,
go.
She didn't have her heart in
it. I feel like Bedelia is definitely in the abused spouse area.
She thinks she can find a way
out. Where she's like, no, I'm going.
Can.
I'm really going to go this time. I'm really going to go.
And she can't.
And she just can't.
I really, at that moment when the door was about to open, I wanted sort of a sitcom-y moment where she realizes she has the suitcase in her hand and she needs to not be seen with it.
she just throws
the jacket and then just stands there like she's been waiting for him. Well, it's about time you got home.
Hello, honey.
Exactly.
How was your day?
Did the rest of the talk go well?
Can I get you a drink?
Instead,
I had to go. I'm sorry.
Right. Instead, she's just standing there like a deer in the headlights.
And Hannibal doesn't care.
He looks at her suitcase and just sort of keeps going.
It's like, oh, okay, we're doing this now? You're going to do this now?
This now? Well, fine.
Can we talk about the blood droplet?
Well, yes. So
oh
we go to a
gosh.
Commercial and come back. as Anthony is getting clubbed in the face.
We don't get a lot of definition with it.
We don't know. We have no idea what it is.
The blood droplet going in and out of focus toward her face.
A droplet of blood explodes in front of her face.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we see it burst and hit her face. And we see droplets on the floor. And then we see what happened, and that Anthony got hit by what we think is a bust of Aristotle.
Yeah, it looks like it says Aristotle on the bottom.
It at least says Tottle.
Yeah, Tottle.
The rest is bloody.
Somebody named Tottle was important enough.
It could be Mr. Buttle from Central Services. It's a Brazil joke.
Okay.
Yes.
I only watched it once. I know. So I can't.
It's okay.
I don't have it memorized.
Really, it was for Miko.
Yes.
Okay. She enjoyed it.
Very much so.
There we go. So this is where we get the real crux of their relationship. Are you in this very moment observing or participating? And Bedelia still thinks she's observing.
Yeah.
But Hannibal points out that observing in this very moment is participating. You're not stopping me.
Did you know what would happen?
Yeah.
Yes. Is this exactly what you curious. Thought would happen?
She was curious.
But it was working out exactly how she had thought it was going to. That and made him feel like it was participation rather than observation.
It's definitely participation. Exactly. She knew what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. From the moment Anthony came over for dinner, she knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And she did nothing to stop it except for sit in front of a camera in the train station. That's it.
So be so passive.
And pack a bag.
And when Anthony finally gets to the door on the other side of the room, and Hannibal goes over and reaches under his chin and yanks up and breaks his neck in the most horrible way.
My just cringed. My stomach just like flopped over inside. I was like, oh God, that sounds so real.
And I have to say, probably one of the scariest moments on television is that slow, bloody crawl.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
To the door while they're having this casual
conversation. Neither of them are concerned with him getting out because he's not getting out.
Nope.
And you almost can feel the dawning horror in him. It's like, I'm going to try this. They don't seem to care. I'm going to try this, but they don't seem to care.
Yes.
And Hannibal turning and saying, oh, Bedelia, what have you gotten yourself into?
Yes.
Oh, so cold.
Yeah.
Cold as ice.
Cold as ice.
Cold as ice.
Now I've got that song in my head.
Cold You're willing as to sacrifice to our love.
Willing to sacrifice our love. Mm-hmm. Okay. Done.
Hannibal is willing to sacrifice their love.
He is
cold as ice. And is traveling by rail alone. Isn't that interesting? That he's by himself.
The first time around, I didn't really realize the powerfulness of this, of what the implications are. There is a single suitcase.
There is.
That they really make sure you get to see in that foreground. And then it's him on the train. And, wow, I mean, don't tease me like this.
And Hannibal, well, I mean, Gillian Anderson is in the opening credits.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they'd throw her in. If they were going to throw her in and just have her be in one episode, they probably would have dropped Lawrence Fishburne, Carolyn DeVernis, and, I mean, maybe even Hugh Dancy from the episode, if we're going to play that kind of game. I have no doubt that we will see Gillian again. Mm-hmm. What I find really interesting is he has the Vitruvian Man, and he starts folding it around the Vitruvian Man's torso.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then he folds it into this origami heart.
Mm-hmm.
As we see a torso that has been folded into a heart on an easel, in a chapel, somewhere.
Somewhere.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around, because we don't get a real... We get a close-up, which doesn't give us the full picture. And then we get a far-away shot, which doesn't give us the full picture.
It's a tease.
I have a feeling.
Yeah.
Okay, it's if you folded, we're going to assume it's Anthony here. Yes. We'll probably find out later. Mm. If you folded him in half at the waist.
Yes.
Okay, his feet are going up above his head.
Yeah.
You lop his feet off, you lop his head off, and you bend his arms straight up. You've got all the ventricles you need.
Okay.
And his torso and thighs are what make up the heart.
The heart.
Well, see, now you're talking to somebody who knows anatomy. So you're missing the vena cava. All you've got are the things coming out the top. That is only the aorta. You do not have the vena cava going down to the rest of the body. You don't have all the pulmonary arteries represented.
You know, he doesn't have a lot of time. He's in a very public space.
It's an artistic impression.
Yeah, it's an impression of a heart.
Artistic impression.
You know? Okay.
It looks a lot like his origami heart.
It does, but the origami heart folded, is also missing.
Well, yes, okay. Yeah. So he folded a piece of paper into a heart, and he folded a man into a heart.
It's essentially a living origami
heart.
It's Happy Valentine's Day, Do You Like Me, Love Hannibal.
Yeah.
And it's Happy Valentine's Day, Will Graham.
Basically, you might as well just put a little, miss you.
Yeah, missing you. Aw, maybe tonight.
Wow, okay, you're going with a conversation heart.
I am going with a conversation heart. You just say, writes it on the heart.
Maybe tonight.
Maybe tonight. What a bang-up way to end the episode.
Yes. Yes. And it was, again, thrilling, because I wasn't even expecting to get to see a tableau in this episode.
No, it does not lend itself to you. To you seeing that at the end, it didn't.
And then to give us one, a surprising one, out of nowhere.
It's like a little gift.
Yeah. Just a stunning opening. Mm-hmm. And for a show, it's hard to believe this show is only 3 seasons old.
Yes.
This show is only 2 seasons plus one old. Mm-hmm. And has such a sense of self, such a sense of purpose, and... Man, they should just give him all of the money.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And let him do as many seasons of this as he wants.
Yeah.
And sell the DVDs. And maybe put it on Netflix instead of stupid Amazon Prime streaming that nobody uses.
So everyone who's out there.
Yes.
Watch the show. Give it ratings.
Yes.
Yes. You know what? I don't have any problem with you downloading this show. But if you know anyone who has a DVR... They better be recording it. They don't even need to watch it.
Just play
record
it
and play it. Play it again. Play it again. Give this show the ratings it deserves. And I think since it's on in the summer and since it's on a Thursday, I think it actually has a fighting chance this year. And I think that's proof that NBC is giving it that chance. But the fact that it's giving it that chance means if it still doesn't, do it. Well, then it could be very difficult for NBC to say, yeah, we want season 4. And we want season 4.
Yes, we do.
We do. We
and
do,
5
we
and
do.
6 and 7 and 8. I don't care how
but
long.
You know, I said this in the finale last year. That was the end of the stuff we didn't know before Red Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant we could have this as a legit prequel.
Mm-hmm.
And then watch the series of movies. And that's something.
That it's creating a very interesting whole package.
Yeah. So, and then this season, we know we're going to have Red Dragon by the end of this season.
Yes, we do.
So if we have Red Dragon... Then I can go on to Silence of the Lambs. I can go on to Hannibal.
Mm.
I mean, I don't need to go on to Hannibal anymore because we've gotten all the best bits so far.
Yeah.
If Mason Verger, we know Mason Verger is likely figuring into this season.
Yeah.
If Mason Verger's playing his whole game with Hannibal in this season, I can enjoy that thoroughly and then just watch Silence of the Lambs after it. I would love to see what Brian Fuller does with Silence of the Lambs. And he's talked about wanting to hire a minority for Clarice, if he gets to do Clarice, because now there are so many more women in positions at Quantico and in the FBI. So now he wants to push it further and have that Southern minority person. So I just want to see what he'll do with it. Yeah. And I want to see what he'll do if they won't give him the rights to Silence of the Lambs.
Shmerly Schmarling.
I want to see the Shmerly Schmarling stuff.
We want to see Shmerly Schmarling.
I'm actually more interested to see what he would do if he can't get Silence of the Lambs.
Well, he has said, and this isn't really a spoiler, he's said that because there's still so much trouble with the rights.
Yeah.
He's rejiggered his plan again. Mm-hmm. So after this season, season four would be mostly not Silence of the Lambs, but would be able to transition into Silence of the Lambs towards the end.
Oh.
So he's got a plan. And frustratingly, Entertainment Weekly interviewed him about it, and he talked about that off the record. And then Entertainment Weekly confirmed how amazing it is. It's like, fuck you all. Fuck you all.
Screw you.
I am here for spoilers. I want the spoilers now.
You are not the avoider of spoilers. You jump
in. I try to avoid spoilers, but this show, I
got
see.
You hooked.
Well, I see nothing that would ruin something for me. You know,
because you'd watch it no matter what.
Yeah, knowing all of it, just, you know, when I knew that Mason Verger was going to show up last season, I was just on the edge of my seat waiting for Mason Verger to show up.
I remember when you told me, you were like, do you want to know something? You want to know something, right? You want to know something? I got something to tell you. You want to know this.
And this season, too. I know a lot of the structure of the season, and it in no way makes me feel like I'm going to not enjoy it as much.
It's not going to be any less exciting or exhilarating or surprising, because what you know is not necessarily exactly what he's going to give you.
Because I know that he won't give away things, like last season, I didn't know if Freddie Lowndes was killed by Will. Because he didn't talk about
that.
No,
he kept
that one close.
But he did talk about how we're doing the wheelchair thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, dear God, if we're doing the wheelchair thing, that means Freddy's dead, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
No. And that made it even more surprising. So it's one of those weird cases where knowing a little bit is actually making things even more exciting. Mm-hmm. Knowing what happens in the books is making it more fascinating. Yeah.
And then you have those little exciting moments, like when something familiar shows up on a door, or a name is told, or something that is like a hint of a memory from the book. You get sort of excited because you're like, oh, I remember that. Oh, that's interesting that they used it in that place.
But we will stand by our no-spoiler policy.
Mm.
We will talk vaguely about book things that interact.
Yeah, everything we talked about in this episode gives nothing away.
But I will never say the things I know about upcoming episodes.
Right.
On this, because that is for you to find out. The information is there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all you have to do is read Red Dragon or Hannibal to get bits of what's happening this season. Mm-hmm. Or listen to absolutely any interview with Brian Fuller, and you will know what's happening this season. But I'm blown away. Mm-hmm. This is a stunning achievement of television for the first episode of a season.
Mm-hmm.
To come back from such an amazing episode for the last episode last season to just a stunning opener.
And it's so consistent. It's well written. It's well directed. It's well shot.
And Vincenzo Natali directed the first three episodes of this season.
Oh, so this is...
Really, the Europe stuff is going to look gorgeous this season.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, we get another season of fantastic music.
Yes.
And they're being experimental.
Well, it already makes me want the soundtrack.
Oh,
and I'm
totally.
So frustrated that the soundtrack's not going to be coming out until after the season.
This one in particular, because they're using so many things that are evocative of the locations they're at. The choices that they use in Paris really make you feel that you're there. And I'm loving the Italian choices because it's everything from, you know, sort of religious choral pieces and opera and Italian jazz. And it's sort of...
We had a Requiem in there, too.
Exactly. It's all these wonderful aspects of Italian music done in different ways that evoke different emotional experiences from you or lead you on a certain path. And it, It's a team that works delightfully well together.
They work amazingly well together. So why don't we leave it there till next week?
Yes.
Episode 2, Primavera, is coming.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us on Twitter at EatTheRootCast. You can email us. We're going to the easy one, eattherootcast@gmail.com. There was some confusion that I either said it too fast or it didn't work. And so eattherootcast@gmail.com, that comes to us. It's confirmed. Email us with your thoughts or questions. Miko's been doing a great job on Tumblr now that she can go on the internet because there was that problem last season.
Yes.
Eattherootcast.tumblr.com. And we are part of the Swingset FM network, and you can find other podcasts about sexuality as well as other entertainment podcasts. We do the Damn Good podcast about Twin Peaks. That's at swingset.fm. And if you're on Reddit, you can go to reddit.com/r/swingsetfm to find our subreddit.
Mm-hmm.
So come there and continue the conversation. Miko, where can we find you on the internet?
At Technogeisha on Twitter. Miko Technogeisha on Facebook.
You are also the proprietor of technogeisha.com.
Yes, I am also at technogeisha.com and at Life on the Swing Set. I believe it's like /author.
One of those confusing WordPress permalink
things.
Yeah.
But if you just go there and you just put me in the.
And you are co-host of the Kinky Geeks.
Yes, with Ophelia.
Ophelia. So Ophelia, mm-hmm. Where can we find you on the internet?
I am at Ophelia Tesla on Facebook, or at Ophelia Tesla on Twitter, and Ophelia Tesla on Facebook.
And that's O-P-H-I-L-I-A.
Like, as in the love of Ophelia.
The love of O's.
Exactly.
Excellent. Well done.
My name has a long story, but anyway. And then Tesla, as in Nikolai Tesla. And
you can find me at Swing Set Life. I talk a lot about sex, so be forewarned.
Yeah.
But I also talk a lot about geeky shit. You know, Doctor Who's coming back soon.
Yes.
And
that's kind of like how mine is. It's like there's sexuality. There's a lot of geeky stuff. But I also
sexuality and geekery.
Fun
we run the gamut. Fun stuff like depression.
Right.
Yes. Well done.
Yay! Aww.
But please, if you are a fan of this show, please check out our wonderful benefactors at Sound On Sight. They have podcasts about Game of Thrones. I was just on their Game of Thrones podcast. That was a blast. There's This Is Our Design, which is the show that got us into making a Hannibal podcast with our wonderful friend Kate Kulczyk, who was just on our finale, our 3.5-hour.
Yes.
The most popular episode we've ever done, by the way, of Eat the Rootcast, is our 3.5-hour season 2
awesome.
Finale.
They just can't get enough.
So we will be back next week with Primavera.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for joining us at the table.
Hey, this is Dan Savage from the Savage Lovecast and Savage Love, and you're listening to a Swing Set podcast at Swing Set FM.